Many strange legends are told of these jungles of India. But none so strange as the story of a small boy named Mowgli. It all began when the silence of the jungle was broken by an unfamiliar sound. It was a sound like one never heard before in this part of the jungle. It was a man cub. Had I known how deeply I was to be involved, I would have obeyed my first impulse and walked away. This man cub would have to have nourishment, and soon. It was many days' travel to the nearest man village, and without a mother's care, he would soon perish. And it occurred to me. A family of wolves I knew had been blessed with a litter of cubs.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today is Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeff Omega.
Hello, everyone.
How are you guys today?
Good.
Not doing too really bad. You know what? I think every so often we do an episode of this podcast where one of us has an opinion contrary to the vast majority of public opinion, and I think that might be me today. I thought the 2016 Jungle Book was not that great, so.
Ooh, very interesting. Well, Sam's not here with us today because he hates talking animals, and he had to work. He would have done it, but I'm sure he was very happy to work. He was like, don't adjust your schedule, just keep recording. He was very, he's been dreading me pulling this one out. But after a month of horror talk, I really wanted to bring some joy back into the world, and I really love the Jungle Book. So, yeah. We're doing the Jungle Book today.
So good. You know, I when we were watching it, I completely forgotten something. Something had occurred to me that I hadn't thought of in years. And it was when I was younger, I swear to God that we had the record of the soundtrack to the Jungle Book, because every song I knew all the words to. I knew every note of it. It was so weird. I'm like, oh yeah, we did have that.
That's so cool. I only got to see like bits of this movie on like, you know, the Disney afternoon or the Sunday Disney thing, right? That would be on CBC.
Yes.
So I'd see the movie in pieces. So like I don't even know up until now if I'd hacked. Well, no, I'm pretty sure I've seen the whole movie a couple of times since then. But as a kid, I'd only seen like the musical bits and things like that. But I was still quite entranced by it. I'm like, this is some great stuff. And oh, the animation style was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of dug it. And I had seen the 2016 before and really enjoyed it. Not without its problems as well, but I think it's really good. And Jeff kept bringing up the 94 Disney movie. And
yes.
I did get a chance to rewatch it. You are wrong. It is not a remake, like I said.
It's more like a reboot, isn't it?
Well, you know, they do kind of dance around the movie. We do see Mowgli as a child and how he winds up in the jungle lost and taken up by the panther. Yeah. And then we see him as a full-grown adult. And then they do wind up shifting some of the Kipling stuff into his adulthood, and they bring in King Louis, who is a Disney created character, and we still have that kingdom moment. But for the most part, like, I would say this is almost a sequel that uses that bit as an origin point, much like most of our Spider-Man and Superman and Batman movies, where we always have to recap the origin before we get on with our new story. Yeah, and I know that drives you nuts.
It's like the person who wrote it was a really big fan of Tarzan more than the Jungle Book.
I was about to say that. It is Tarzan.
I will third that. I would absolutely third that. I think Stephen Sommers wanted to do a Tarzan movie and made a Jungle Book movie instead. It was originally developed as an independent film with an $18 million budget. And then Disney got involved, which is probably where the King Louis rewrite came in. And budget blew up to about $30 million, which, you know, good for Stephen Sommers.
Yeah.
I didn't see if it was very successful or not. I know it had a Christmas opening. I can't remember if it was actually reasonably successful, but I don't think Stephen Sommers' career actually really blossomed until he did the Mummy movies.
Yeah.
I feel like the Jungle Book got him his job on the Mummy.
I'd agree with that.
There's a lot of Indiana Jones elements to the Jungle Book movie he did, just like the Mummy.
Yeah, he really does like that pulp adventure styling.
Oh yeah, and I like how he has flawed but ultimately very entertaining characters. Like, there's always that funny sidekick, always. And I love it.
Now, one thing that's kind of interesting with the 90s movie is in the development of the animated movie, from what I was reading, basically there was a script adaptation that was being done of the Jungle Book that did involve evil colonialist hunter and, you know, treasure that was found underneath King Louis's temple. And Disney wasn't a big fan of the script because he thought it was too dark and it wasn't like the family friendly type movie that he was wanting to make. It was the same writer who did The Sword in the Stone, which didn't do very well. But I got a very strong impression that the 90s movie is more based on the initial Jungle Book script for the animated movie than anything else, because it's not similar at all to the book.
Yeah, that character is actually prominent in one of the Mowgli stories that you're talking about, but was very much written out of the original 67 and clearly the 2016 as well. Most of these versions are a big departure from the Kipling stories. There are, I'm going to acknowledge the fact that there are tons of Jungle Book films out there. We're going to focus on the two Disney ones on this episode because we can't watch 20 movies and talk about them in one episode. And they're all their own adaptations of the material. So we're going to concentrate on the 67 and the 2016 as they're very much feeding off that original 67 script that the 2016 one with the big characters and the songs and that structure is kind of there, and we'll talk about the differences as well. But I'm sure everybody's got their childhood memories of this. Trish said she might have had the record. Jeff, did you grow up with Jungle Book?
Yeah, you know, I did actually. The Jungle Book, basically when I was growing up, so my sister is about 9 years older than me. So when I was very young, my sister was also at a good age for my parents to start buying the Disney VHS that were getting released when they were being let forth from the vault. So definitely Jungle Book was one of the more popular ones that I really liked. But I've always been a fan of jungle stories, and I've always been a fan of monkeys in particular. I don't know why. So definitely I have a lot of fond memories of the Jungle Book, particularly the whole King Louis sequence, which was my favorite. I still think that that song, I Want to Be Like You, I think I have the unpopular opinion of thinking it's a better song than Bare Necessities, but it's just so catchy.
I think that's one of the classics.
Yeah, it's Louis Prima, and Louis Prima is really good. When they call, like, he's literally, what's funny is in that song, he's like King Louis, and he mentions like swing, but he was known as the King of Swing, which was I thought was kind of really fun. Little note that they had for him.
When him and Phil Harris are scatting off against each other, too, it's just so good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was all ad lib. It's fun. Now, we should acknowledge that King Louis and the monkeys were very much criticized as being a black stereotype. We'll talk about that elephant in the room here briefly. But what people don't realize is they originally wanted Louis Armstrong for that role, and Walt Disney shied away and went with Louis Prima because he didn't want that stereotype. What people don't realize is Louis Prima wasn't putting on a voice, this Italian singer. That's how he talked. So yeah. He naturally sounded that way, but it comes off black and people read too much into things. There was actually a warning on my Disney Plus when I started the original Jungle Book about saying, hey, there's things in here that weren't okay then and they're not okay now, but rather than change it, we want to warn you that these things happened. I'm like, watching it, I'm like, oh, this is just an interpretation that people are plastering over this thing that isn't actually there.
I agree.
The only thing that I thought was mildly wrong was when the elephant smacked another elephant in the ass. I'm like, and that's not that bad.
That felt really bad.
I definitely thought that, I mean, when the movie came out, that was also when civil rights and everything were kind of, you know, in the thick of it in the States in 67. And it's unfortunate because I really don't think that there is any racism there, but it's something that, you know, because there are similar things that people have done in hurtful contexts, people just like to put that onto the Jungle Book. But I don't think that that is the case.
The crows in Dumbo are bad.
Yeah, we're not saying Disney isn't guilty of doing it at times, but Walt was very much aware of the political motivations of the era at this time. This was his last film, by the way, and Walt has had the racism tag on him through his life and his death. So, you know, I can see him actively trying to avoid those kind of connotations because those accusations were already being made before The Jungle Book.
Yeah. And let's be honest, he's probably more known for being anti-Semitic than anything else.
Yeah.
But what I found about this, and they talk about the King Louis scene, and I don't know, like, it's weird. The racism seems to be like, if you want to see it, it's because you're a little bit racist. You know, like, it's when somebody who's racist, like, well, I think I would probably refer to them like as ape-like. So obviously this is a racist thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's sort of.
Yeah, you know, honestly, if I had
like that, you're the part of the problem.
Yeah, if I hadn't seen that warning, I would have never thought that. What am I supposed to be looking for? Because I've seen this a few times and I don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I should have freeze framed on it and read the whole thing because it was really long. I didn't have enough time to read it all. But if that hadn't come up, I wouldn't have seen it. Like, I wouldn't have found, and then I had to read after seeing the movie where some of those connotations were even coming from. Like, I assumed it was the King Louis stuff, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And they didn't change the Louis character, how he sounded when they did Tailspin.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I just thought of it as like swing dancing. To me, it was like the datedness of this, the swingness. I think this is what I noticed about it. It had nothing to do with anything else.
Yeah,
it was like, oh,
yeah,
no, that's like an old way of dancing.
Yeah, the jazz scat type thing, that's dead. that's kind of old, but that's it. Like, a few dated references within the film, but I didn't see the racism in there. Although I did like the vultures that should have been the Beatles, but weren't.
Okay, thank you. I was like looking at them going like, there's one guy that really doesn't seem like a Beatle. So I don't know how this is the Beatles.
Well, they originally had developed those characters, the vultures, for the Beatles, which that one I almost could read something into. But
you can see Ringo.
Yeah, and Ringo for sure. That accent is definitely there. And Brian Epstein had brought it to the Beatles, and I think it was Lennon who said,
yeah,
no, I don't want to do this. We shouldn't do this. And that was that. But, you know, they had already had the designs and stuff, so they just kind of kept that look for the vultures.
No, it's because this is like John Lennon, he had a huge aversion to animation just because in the 1950s, there was an American animated series where the Beatles were characters called The Beatles that was very terrible. And John Lennon always regretted that he agreed to license The Beatles for that show because it was so awful. So he swore off of animation forever. And then when they were doing Yellow Submarine, they were supposed to do an original soundtrack for it. But again, John Lennon was like, I don't want to do any animation. So it's terrible, John Lennon. But
that was not bad.
I applaud your attempt.
But what happened with the whole Lord of the Rings thing? Because wasn't there a whole thing where the Beatles wanted to be in the Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, they were trying to get that off the ground just because they were fans of the books and they were going to do a soundtrack. They wanted Kubrick to direct it. And I think it fell apart because Stanley Kubrick didn't want to be involved with it, from what I remember. But yeah, there was a lot of animation opportunities where the Beatles could have shown up in animation that they turned down all because of one terrible 1950s animated series. So yeah, that's why John Lennon didn't want to have anything to do with Jungle Book, despite it being, you know, the best animation studio in the world.
Oh yeah, by 67... Yeah, they were it. they were the big studio, and I think at this point they weren't even distributing through RKO anymore. RKO was actually in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want to listen to the original 1967 trailer?
Yes, please.
Okay, well, let's dive into the original 1967 trailer. It's a long one, guys, but it'll bring in lots of nostalgia.
It's been a long time in coming, but now, after 4 years, the announcement can be made. Walt Disney's most entertaining triumph in the art of animation is here.
Doobie 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 dee doo. Well, it's a doobity doo. Yes, it's a doobity doo. Well, now. What have we here?
It's Walt Disney's The Jungle Book.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your stress.
Yes, The Jungle Book. A new departure in contemporary entertainment.
Kid, we've got to get to a tree. This calls for some big scratching.
You're lots of fun, Baloo.
A boisterous musical comedy version of Rudyard Kipling's familiar stories about the boy Mowgli and his encounters with human nature in the jungle. There's the devious Ka.
Trust in me, just in me.
And the envious Louie, king of the apes.
I want to be like you.
Hop-de-hoop-de-hoop-a.
I want to walk like you.
Cheep.
Talk like you.
Choo-choo.
The Dawn Patrol.
Oh, the aim of our patrol
is a question rather droll.
And the pompous Colonel Huttie.
A dusty muzzle. Soldier, that haircut is not regulation. Rather on the gaudy side, don't you think? There. That's better.
Then there's the jungle's fair-weather friends.
We've never met an animal we didn't like.
And the treacherous Shere Khan.
Boo.
Let's get out of...
Run, friend, run!
Run, Mowgli, run!
A man cub in the jungle. And all he has on his side are two real friends. The man cub's jungle guardians.
Oh, no! Baloo!
Are you kidding? There's teeth in the other end.
Baloo and Bagheera, two wonderful characters destined to become comedy immortals.
Fire. So that's what that scoundrel's after.
Yeah. Well, man, what a beat.
Will you stop that silly beat business and listen? This will take brains, not brawn.
You better believe it, and I'm loaded with both.
Get
mad, baby.
I want to be like you.
I want to walk like you.
In 30 years, there's never been a more entertaining achievement in the art of animation.
Dooby-dooby-dooby can learn to be like someone like you.
One more time!
Yeah, can learn to be like someone like me.
See-dee-da-bop-bop-bada-doodle-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
All right, that was the Jungle Book 1967 trailer from Walt Disney Studios, based on the Rudyard Kipling book, and lots of story people involved in this, like most Disney's. Larry Clemens, Ralph Reitz, Ken Anderson, Vance Gary, and Bill Peet. Ken Anderson actually has a connection to a previous episode we've done, episode 151, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And Bill Peet was also a writer on 101 Dalmatians, which we covered in episode 103. This was directed by Wolf Reitherman, who also directed 101 Dalmatians. And
wait, his first name was Wolf?
Wolfgang.
Wolfgang. Okay, so the guy named Wolfgang directs the Jungle Book about a boy raised by wolves.
Yes.
Nice.
I mean, to be fair, he also directed Sword in the Stone, Robin Hood, The Rescuers, Fox and the Hound. He's one of the mainstays at Disney.
And I think that he's largely responsible for this, like, second post-Walt Disney era of movies that came out.
Yeah, Walt had died, I think, about a month after this was completed, or because I think there's a dedication at the end of the movie, so it hadn't actually hit the theaters yet. This stars Phil Harris as Baloo the Bear, and he was the voice in Robin Hood and the Aristocrats. Sebastian Cabot was Bagheera, and he did a lot of narration jobs for Disney as well. Louis Prima was King Louis. I wonder if they actually named the character after Louis Prima, or they had come up with the name and then hired a guy named Louis. It's a chicken and egg scenario.
Both.
Both. I like both. And he's
mainly Louis Armstrong.
Yeah, he's mainly known as a performer and singer rather than an actor. His IMDb credits for music is long. Bruce Reitherman was Mowgli, and he actually worked with Sterling Holloway, who plays Ka the Snake. And even though Ka was trying to eat Mowgli in their previous working relationship, Bruce Reitherman was Christopher Robin in Winnie the Pooh, and Sterling Holloway was Winnie the Pooh. So,
oh, yes.
And
very recognizable voice.
Yeah, Sterling Holloway, we've also actually may have mentioned, because he is one of the many, 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 many people in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And we covered that in episode 232. And back to George Sanders, he was Shere Khan. Batman 66 fans might recognize him as Mr. Freeze. Very cool link.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And he's also in, I guess, the original Rebecca, which, if we ever wanted to, is interesting.
Yeah, someday. Yeah. Someday. Wasn't that a Harrison Ford remake? Or am I thinking of something else?
Army Hammer. They just recently released another one for Rebecca.
Very cool. Very cool. I was just thinking of Sabrina, but it just popped in my head. J. Pat O'Malley was Colonel Hathi, the elephant, and he was also a voice in episode 103, 101 Dalmatians. Go listen to that episode. I've mentioned it a lot. And I want to make a special mention of Clint Howard, who was one of the elephants. Man, it's baffling to think about how far back Clint Howard's career actually goes when you think of, like, the Jungle Book and stuff. But he was one of the elephants, and we talked about him first time in episode 16 in the How the Grinch Stole Christmas remake. And then again in episode 35, he's in The Wraith. And episode 140, Eat My Dust, which was the directorial debut of his brother.
And he was also in Winnie the Pooh as Roo when he was a boy.
Yes, he was. Oh. And people might remember him from that Star Trek episode where they had that big...
Yeah.
He was always crazy looking.
Yeah.
But that's our primary cast of the Jungle Book. There's actually a lot of, like, recognizable faces. So sometimes when we do animation, it's like, oh, nobody's going to know any of these people. And this is one of those times where they were probably very famous in their era. They were casting stars at this point, and you could see bits of their personality within those characters, and the way they talked and moved and stuff was very indicative of those actors, and it's still a tradition that Disney uses today, even in their newer stuff. So I still miss this traditional style of animating, but, you know, they're doing pretty good with their Pixar movies.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate, because I feel like, so Walt Disney was a huge nerd for animation, hand-drawn animation, and he was the one who really kept the studio open even when other people thought it wasn't worth it. And I was reading that if Jungle Book didn't perform well, they were planning on shutting down the animation department. But that partially because Disney died and it was his last movie, it was a huge success.
Yeah, Disney had died, so he was no longer protecting that division, right? And with Sword of the Stone having been a failure the year before, yeah, if this had underperformed, it would have killed the animation division and we wouldn't have had that second renaissance in the 90s. Thankfully, it did. It had a budget of $4 million, which is a pretty big budget for 67. It had an opening weekend of over 5 million, so it already made its budget back in its first weekend and grossed just in the US 141 million plus, nearly $142 million, and went on to a worldwide gross of $210.3 million. Huge! And these are 1967 totals, guys. Huge.
Yeah, that's like Marvel money.
In terms of ticket sales, this movie is still unsurpassed for most tickets sold in Germany.
UK was another big one. It was one of their top films in the UK at the time, too.
Well, it's got such great... To me, I love the music of this movie. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. It's so catchy.
And I think they were nominated for songs at the Oscars. They did try to get it nominated for Best Picture, but they were allergic to doing so. I don't think they'd actually get a Best Picture nomination until Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, I read that today.
They weren't doing animation Best Picture until... Yeah, well later.
Yeah, no, I think just the Best Picture category, not an animation
Gregory Peck. Yeah. He was the Gregory Peck was the president of the Academy, and he resigned over this movie not getting a nomination.
He did.
Wow, that's a little nugget I didn't know. That's wonderful trivia.
Yeah, no, he fought for it and lost.
Oh. Gregory Peck's a badass. So,
yeah. Can't believe we haven't done a Gregory Peck movie. We will.
Yes.
What was that,
Jeff? Gregory did such good stuff.
Yeah.
We can't.
Yeah. They were only going to make it worse.
Yeah.
I could see why he was really championing this movie to be Best Picture because, I mean, especially with it being Walt Disney's last project and it kind of being a bit of a return to form because the last couple movies animated before this one didn't really light the world on fire, and this one did. I definitely think if it got the nomination, it probably would have won for Best Picture, just based off of all of those elements and the fact it was Disney's last movie. I can definitely see why he would resign over something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as far as these older Disney's, this was easily one of my favorite, and I don't like a lot of the song and dance type animation, like, I just want to get on with the story. But they're so good at the music. Disney's just always been really good at that. Rarely do they stumble with that.
Well, with this one, I think why I like it, what I noticed is, and this is what I sometimes hate about musicals, is when they have a song that does not forward the story. Mm. But in this musical, a lot of them do. Like the Bare Necessities, I'll Teach You How to Survive. That's how this is going through. The Elephants Marching. Well, it's showing them that they're marching, and I Want to Be Like You. It's a plot point. King Louis wants fire.
Yeah, and that's something the remake really grabs a hold on as a big plot point. And I think they do a really good job of making that this threat of man is they created fire, and they mention the red flower over and over and over again. And King Louis, at least in the original film, he sees this as a stepping stone. He's not afraid of the fire so much as realizing that it grants him power. And at a level that the animal kingdom is not at the level of the apex predator of human beings, and he wants to be there. And it also is an extra level of protection because Shere Khan's afraid of fire. So those are things that they really grabbed onto, I think, and did a great job in the Jon Favreau remake. And he's really good about grabbing those small details, and he turned it into something that really drove that film.
Yeah, and it's sort of when we talk about like a bad, like the characterization of something, they just basically, in original King Louis, he just seemed like a happy-go-lucky guy who just wanted fire because, like, you know, I just want to do a little better in life. But in the remake, King Louis is like a mobster. Essentially.
That's interesting because rewatch of the original one, I got the really strong impression, and this is probably me reading into it, but this wild concept that King Louis, separate from all of the other monkeys that he is the lord over, is basically self-aware enough to know that the next stepping stone in evolution would be the discovery of fire. And if only he could learn the secret of fire, that would be the key to unlock how he could become a man, which is like surprisingly deep for a Disney movie. But I'm probably reading into it.
Well, and I think he's actually aware of the evolutionary steps as well, because he calls Mowgli cousin.
Yeah.
And we are, genetically speaking, cousins. So, like,
closest
I really...
to orangutans.
Yeah, I think that was very much something they were aware of. And I think that was something inherent in that character. It was very smart writing and a way to get use colloquialisms in a slick way.
Mm-hmm. Because it's less about him getting power. Yeah, he wanted to be man. He wanted to, you know, be an equal with the man village and step up in evolution.
Yeah, he's certainly more short-tempered and passive-aggressive about it in the remake.
Yeah.
And then he just gets aggressive.
Yeah.
Well, he does.
Yeah,
he
also, he's like King Kong in the new one.
Yeah, well, that's why they changed him to a Gigantopithecus, is so they can make him bigger and feel like he is lording over the rest of those monkeys. And orangutans aren't indigenous to India, so that's why they changed it.
No. Mm. And... Well, see, what
but
bothers
he's,
me, yeah,
he's
A,
big.
The size.
And he, they make
yeah,
him
that
total
size thing
gangster-like.
Yeah, the size bothered me, but if you watch the entire sequence, what you notice is not just the size, but there's a distinct inconsistency all over the place with his size.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He gets bigger and he gets smaller and he gets bigger and he gets smaller. And that just, that one part just really ripped me out of the movie.
The inconsistency bugs me there as well. But all the animals are about 150% bigger than they should be. So I guess I forgive it a little bit. It bothered me a lot the first time I watched it. I was expecting it this time around because I remembered it. So it didn't bother me as much the second time around. It's very much that action sequence that you would get in Pirates of the Caribbean that they're just hoping you don't notice too much. And he still brings down the kingdom on top of himself through that, all that. And that's something that is still in the original, but in a much more comedic way.
Well, in the original, he stays the same size.
Yeah, he stays the same size, and he's trying to hold up the kingdom, and then it still comes down around him, but he's not buried underneath it.
You know, that was I don't know, because I'm not an animator, or at least I'm not a 3D CGI animator, but you'd think that with modeling, it would be much easier to have characters at a more consistent size, because everything is in models that they build in these 3D environments. So, yeah, you'd think that they'd have a bit of a handle on his size more than they did.
I totally agree. I mean, you have that, and you've also got the model of the monkey city.
Let's call it the Monkey Kingdom.
Monkey Kingdom. There we go. The Monkey Kingdom is something, it's background, like it's something that's constructed. So, I mean, you don't size it up and size it down either. So yeah, along those same levels too, you should be able to maintain consistency.
Yeah. Like with the part where all the monkeys were crawling all around on him, they were like insects on him, but he definitely wasn't that much bigger than the monkeys.
No. Well, he was, and he wasn't. In certain parts, he was. And then it's so funny. When he's sitting at a certain point, he looks smaller. And then he gets up, and then he's huge. And then he gets up, and he's not quite as big as he used to be. It's very, very odd.
And then he's, like, reaching through doors like he's never been able to get through them before.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of... Yeah. There's a lot of inconsistency in that scene. So I think that the animators... boffed it on that one, but I mean, they were going for action and hoping nobody would notice. We did. But there's other things in there they do really well that I appreciated. Favreau noticed at the beginning of the original Jungle Book in 67, it opens with the book, but that book never closes.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that at the end of his movie, he closed it. And
same.
And it's the original book. It's the same book.
Yeah.
He pulled it out of the Disney vault.
Book?
Yeah, same velvet the book is laying on, and the same book that they actually uncovered from the Disney archive vaults. I really appreciated that. And he had some fun pop-up stuff afterwards. But
love that. There was really one bit, talking about inconsistent size, you have like the desert. Is it the desert rats or like the ones who are like the big-eared mice? And Shere Khan's just a small little thing compared to this big thing. Yeah, they had some, that's amazing.
They had some fun. Well, because they got the big pop-ups and then they left the book and then they came back to a page where, I thought that was really some fun there.
Yeah, watch the honestly, if you watch this movie, watch the credits.
Yeah, the credits were the most fun I had the whole movie.
Ooh, what didn't you like? I really sense.
Let's dig in.
Yeah, let's dig into the trauma here.
Well, you know what? So here's the thing. The movie is fine. It's not bad. It's fine. I think that there's a lot of gripes that I have with it that are gripes that I have with a lot of modern big budget movies in general. I think overall, in terms of the story of the 2016 Jungle Book, one thing I wasn't a fan of is how there's no character progression for Mowgli, but every character around him are the people who grow in the story. Because initially, they're saying, Mowgli, don't do these tricks. You know, Mowgli does the tricks. He's a brat. He's like, don't tell me what to do. And then at the end of the movie, Mowgli is right. And the movie ends with him living in the jungle just as it began. And he doesn't really progress or grow in his position. He goes through this whole epic story, very much like, you know, the Joseph Campbell story wheel type story, except at the end, he doesn't change as a person. He's just more arrogant than he was at the beginning.
Well,
so that characterization is a little weird.
I'm going to disagree here. And here's why. Because he's been raised by the wolf pack and he wants to be accepted by the wolf pack. But his own nature is to be man and be human and be inventive. And that's when he gets in trouble. And he's learned to be confident in being himself throughout this progression. And yes, the animals have learned to accept him for being human as well. They've learned to fear man, and except for this one, is helpful. Although they should be fearful of him because Shere Khan was right and he set that fucking forest on fire.
That was the other thing too, is at the end, Shere Khan makes this big speech and Mowgli, he destroys the forest. The message was ultimately, you know, Shere Khan is bad. And the only way to get rid of Shere Khan as a problem is if all of the animals fight him and defend Mowgli to the death, even though Mowgli is doing exactly what Shere Khan said. And I would even argue that in terms of the confidence, at the very beginning of the movie, when he's talking with Bagheera, Bagheera's like, Mowgli, you shouldn't have done all of this stuff. You should have stayed at the path. And he's like, yeah, but I would have made it. Like, he's totally confident in himself at the beginning of the movie. And the only thing that changes is that everyone else believes in Mowgli now, even though he set their forest on fire.
I think the problem with that, it's not so much that, like, his character progression isn't so much that he gets more confident. I think his character progression is he's like, I'm a wolf at the beginning. And at the end, he's like, yeah, I'm a guy. I live with wolves, but I'm man. Because he does say at the end, I'm not a wolf. So that's why I do what I do. Like, acknowledging he's separate from the pack, but he respects the pack.
It's also tough because the original 60s movie is so good. And also, like, the 90s movie is very, very good. So very high bar. The way that they handled Mowgli as man, Mowgli as animal in the 90s movie, I thought was really deft in terms of how at the very end, he's finally confronted with Shere Khan. And then they look at each other. And because he doesn't show Shere Khan any fear, Shere Khan doesn't see him as a man, and how there's a whole thing about how he's not like a man because man is destructive, but he's also not like an animal. He is who he is. And I feel like that's a much stronger message at the end rather than killing Shere Khan and him accepting that he is who he is. But it all falls kind of flat, especially when compared to the other two. When the original one ends with, you know, the acceptance of moving on and growing in life and letting go of people. And this one, it's just things are kind of how they were at the beginning, except people are happier.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about them killing off Shere Khan either. It was kind of the Lion King ending. They even gave him the scar, which it's ironic that Favreau went to direct that. So he actually had to acknowledge the shit he cribbed from the Lion King. So I haven't seen that remake. I'm wondering how he got around doing the same things twice. But I mean, the original one, the fire is still present and it scares Shere Khan away. It also opens up for more stories but if they want it to or not. Personally, I'm preferable of them all becoming pilots. Yeah. It's quite the evolutionary jump.
Yeah, tailspin. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
He started it. We're talking evolution. He started it, and then they got planes, like, right away.
Yeah, it was crazy. they're Wright brothers, and just boom.
Yeah.
But, you know, I liked in the 94 that they made him almost this spirit of the forest. And yes, man was very aware of him, including his name, which I wasn't so cool with. I guess it's the natives all gave him names instead. But I did like that kind of spirit protector of the forest that Shere Khan was. And that does kind of transfer over to the elephants in the remake, where they are now the spiritual protectors of the forest, but they're also kind of the get out of jail free card. Like, okay, you set this forest on fire so we can have this action sequence.
Oh my goodness.
And we'll put this out for you, you dumb kid.
You know, that's the part that really bothered me.
The animals should stay to free Mowgli.
They're just like, oh, the elephants just magically irrigated the entire jungle, so all the fires are out. It's like, what a cop out.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a cop-out, too.
Well, it's also a cop-out in the fact that it's forest fire, and Mowgli's up in the trees, and he does not get any smoke inhalation.
Yeah, and also the dead tree. Wouldn't the dead tree be the first thing to go up in a blaze?
Right? Absolutely.
The movie was fine. A lot of the ways that they deviated did not make sense. And I do think that the animation was very beautiful, but just because a lot of money was thrown into it and it's very technically proficient doesn't mean that it's a good movie.
I'm offended that they called it a live action movie when there's only one human being and one live thing in the whole movie. It's shot in Los Angeles, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and he's reacting to stuff around him that isn't there. So it's not...
Yeah, he must have been, like, acting against tennis balls and people in stupid suits. And but, you know, like, they did do some pretty good casting as far as the characters go. Like, actually, you know what? Since I'm heading towards that, let's run the trailer for the 2016, and then we'll get into the cast and what we liked and what we didn't like.
Are you alone out here? What are you doing so deep in the jungle? Don't you know what you are? I know what you are. I know where you came from. Poor, sweet little cub. I'll keep you close. Let go of your fear now. And trust.
All right, that was the trailer for the 2016 Jungle Book, and this was a screenplay by Justin Marks, who I'm surprised the script was as good as it was, because he's got hits like Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, and he's also the creator of Counterpart, the television series.
See, but I've heard good things about Counterpart.
Okay,
some people
that's
really
good.
Like it.
I haven't seen it, so I can't.
Well,
judge.
It's got J.K. Simmons, and it's like there's two universes. Good. Yeah, there's a good JK in it.
Okay, and even, you know what, The Legend of Chun-Li is not terrible.
First Street Fighter movie.
First Street Fighter movie. Yeah, first Street Fighter movie. Not terrible. Okay, The Jungle Book, directed by Jon Favreau, who is a mainstay at Disney at this point, and this stars everybody who's in a Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. Jon Favreau, of course, directed Iron Man 1 and 2, The Lion King remake in 2019, and is the executive producer, director, and an actor in The Mandalorian.
And Merry Christmas, everyone. Also Elf.
Yes. Oh, yes. Such a good movie.
Yeah, this stars newcomer Neil Sethi as Mowgli. Hasn't really done much since, though. Bill Murray.
He was good, actually.
He was good. I think for a newcomer, an untested actor, he did a pretty good job for a child actor. Absolutely. And
as we talk about, like, against, reacting to nothing.
His tennis balls. Exactly.
Yeah.
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 Really good.
Bill Murray was Baloo, and of course we've talked about him a couple of times, actually. The first time was in episode 50, which was...
Ghostbusters?
I'll say it with more confidence.
Ghostbusters?
Yes! Ghostbusters. Okay. And
I never know which number we're at. I know there's one of them, but I don't know which number it is.
And this one might slip by your memory, but episode 55, The Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes. Oh, yes. He was the evil dentist, wasn't he?
Yes,
he was. Or no, he's the patient.
He's the patient. Okay.
And we have Little Shop of Horrors t-shirts in our Tee Public shop, in
absolutely
case anybody's interested.
Nice. We just launched them on Black Friday. Of course, so when you listen to this episode, it's 2 weeks later. But we do have 8 new designs in our store as part of the Jeff Omega collection, launching that series of shirts. And these are really cool, like public domain poster shirts and stuff that of episodes we've done. And they're really cool. So you should check them out. And
very stylish.
Yeah. Yeah. Search out Invasion of the Remake on TeePublic and you should be able to find it. Ben Kingsley was Bagheera. And of course he was Gandhi. He's really the only guy of Indian heritage in this movie of an Indian story. Yeah, his Iron Man 3 may have not won him all the applause, but another mainstay of Jon Favreau's.
See, I thought he was really good in Iron Man 3.
I enjoyed him. I'm not one of the haters. I really liked what they did and pulled the rug out from under us and still leave that door open for a real Mandarin.
Yeah.
Idris Elba was Shere Khan. I was just leaving that moment for you to go, ha ha. Yeah. And of course, he's also been a recurring character in the Marvel movies, in the Thor series specifically, as Heimdall. And he was in Star Trek Beyond as well. And, you know, Dark Tower, he's been around.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, we're Fast and the
Furious. He's an action movie guy.
He is. Lupita Nyong'o was Raksha. It was nice to hear her voice in there. And, of course, star of Us. We've talked about Little Monsters on our 31 Days of Horror episodes. And star of Black Panther as well.
Yes.
Another. And Star Wars.
Sorry?
Yes.
Oh, and she's... Oh, my goodness. The name is escaping me.
I remember her with the glasses. Right?
Yeah.
Maz Kanata.
Her voice is in it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Maz Kanata.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson was the voice of Ka, the first time the snake's been female that we know of. They didn't talk in the 94. And of course, famous for being in Black Widow. And we talked about her in depth when we covered Ghost in the Shell in episode 192.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she did a great job as Ka, by the way. I really liked that voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad she didn't get to sing her song in the movie, but we do get to hear her rendition during the credit roll. And it's beautiful. It's great. It's fantastic.
She has the best singing voice out of all three actors who they got to sing the songs, and it's not even in the movie.
I know, it bugs me. At least she kind of got the line in, you know, trust in me. So
trust in me.
Giancarlo Esposito was Aquila, the male patriarch wolf of the wolf clan that raised Mowgli. And, of course, very famous for being in Breaking Bad, The Boys, and The Mandalorian recently.
For a connection, he was in one of the guys in jail in Trading Places.
Oh,
one of his
I
first
missed
roles.
That one. Well done.
Yep.
You have to go backtrack in our episodes. I don't know the number on that one. Christopher Walken was King Louis, and we talked about him in episode 179, which was Hairspray. And I did talk about him again during our Stephen King special when I talked about The Dead Zone.
Yes.
Gary Shandling made his final screen appearance as Ikki. And, of course, he was in Iron Man 2 as well. Big another friend of Jon Favreau's and another Marvel mainstay. Nice to hear him in this. It was a shame that he passed away shortly after this film was done. And he does have a credit at the end, an acknowledgement of his passing.
I was confused. Wasn't he... So he was that an Iron Man movie or a Captain America one?
He was
Hail Hydra.
He was also in the not the Winter Soldier one, Civil War. That was that was his last Marvel appearance was Civil War.
Oh, okay, that's why I got confused.
Yeah. And Brighton Rose Favreau, actually I think all of his kids are in here, but I wanted to mention Brighton Rose Favreau specifically because that was the wolf cub Gray, which is very prominent. Great kid voice, you know. And a pretty good talent. Hopefully Brighton's still doing voice work elsewhere because she's really good. But yeah, you know what? I think Scarlett Johansson was probably my favorite replacement. And I agree with Favreau on this, that there were too many male voices within this movie. It's a shame they took away the one female voice from the original, which was the female elephant, which is funny because in a real herd of elephants, the matriarch would be leading the herd.
So, absolutely.
And she's threatening to take over the herd because the colonel's not listening.
Yeah. And he's like, a female leading this? Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So
that's exactly it.
So not giving the elephant's voice here, they definitely had to bring in a female voice.
Well, and it's so weird. Like, why do the elephants not talk at all? I didn't get that part.
Same
if
with
they're
the
like the greatest creatures, really. Why don't they have a voice?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a case of because those are scenes with Mowgli only for the most part, and maybe it's a case of he doesn't speak the language. I don't know. That's my no prize explanation for it. So if he doesn't speak the language, neither do we.
That was one thing that was a little jarring, is that some animals could speak in a language that all the animals could understand and other animals only made animal noises, which is very odd. And you can't give every animal a voice, but...
No, and I kind of agree with the way he presented those elephants as these revered creatures within the forest, the way he presented them, not giving them a voice and having Mowgli and Bagheera like bow in their presence. Okay, it adds a regalness to them. And as soon as you start giving a voice, it kind of levels the playing field, right? So I kind of get what he was doing there. And I think it was successful in what he was trying to portray.
Yeah. I just think that if there was like certain points where it'd be like, yeah, no, they aren't. It could be, I wouldn't mind them having a voice, but like they weren't talking because they don't deem you worthy of talking to. But when they do deem you worthy, they will talk to you.
Yeah.
I mean, Mowgli wasn't worthy. He burnt the forest down.
Right.
He really did, but he saved a baby elephant, so I don't know. Maybe that's a wash in the elephant community. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he saved one of ours, so we'll fix your fuck up.
Right? Elephants, it was a major fuck up.
That was their way of protecting him and helping him, I guess. Like, you helped one of ours, we'll help you, and we'll get your back on this one. We owe you one. I mean, it's weak, but we'll go with it.
The only thing we got, man.
Yeah. What do you think of Bill Murray's Baloo? I think it still had there's a more of a weariness to the character than he definitely this compared to Phil Harris. Like, there is a boatload of energy and a boatload of Garfield laziness.
Yes.
To Bill Murray's Baloo. I think it's just inherent in the personality. Yeah. And it's kind of, we kind of get that in Ghostbusters as well. So I like kind of seeing his minimum effort.
I do. Character. But I prefer Phil Harris's Baloo because there's one line that he gives in like the original that I really loved where like Mowgli's just like tuckered out. He's like, it's been a long day. It's not easy learning to be me. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're just living life.
Yeah, I have a feeling.
I like the characterization more in the original one, but Bill Murray is always charming, and I definitely enjoyed him as Baloo, even if his singing is not the greatest.
No, yeah, I would say the singing was not on point, and I'm glad they made it a very truncated kind of humming under his breath kind of thing, and not a whole lot of singing, because it was pretty cringy.
I have to say, with the animation of him, though, like with the bear, he felt and looked like a bear, and like realistic grizzly size bear.
Huge, mm-hmm. huge. I think he was supposed to be a Himalayan or something. I mean, he's every animal, as I said before, is very exaggerated, or like a lot bigger than they're supposed to be.
But we're in Alberta, and a grizzly's pretty big. Like, yeah, but, I don't think you're.
But that's supposed to be India.
I know, true. But I mean, like, there's bears that get that big. So I didn't find it completely.
No, I like having the size, because he's a very big bear in the animation as well. And that was something jarring in the 94, Jeff, where they actually had a normal size bear. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, he looks so small.
Yeah, which would be like the bear, any bear in India would be small.
Yeah.
When I'm watching the movie, like actually in the remake, when I noticed that he was that huge, I was kind of confused. I'm like, why would he be that afraid of Shere Khan? I mean, I don't know. A bear versus a tiger? Who knows how that
was something
go.
I was thinking about Bagheera. I was like, how is Bagheera any different from Shere Khan? They're both hunter cats.
I don't
Jaguars
think,
are supposed to be smaller.
Yeah, and I don't think Bagheera was actually afraid of him. You know, he's a fairly big panther. He's definitely smaller than Shere Khan, but they tussle twice in the remake. I don't think they even have a fight in the original. I mean, God, Shere Khan doesn't even appear for 42 minutes of the original film. That's something they could have done better. You need to, if you're going to talk about Shere Khan a lot, maybe have his presence telegraphed a little bit. Like, they do say he's entered the forest and there's a lot of fear, and there's fear that he's going to go straight after Mowgli. But it was Bagheera talking about Shere Khan wanting Mowgli that Shere Khan overheard that made him aware of Mowgli in the first place. It was very you know, if you would have just kept your mouth shut, you might have been fine.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have had to leave. Whereas Favreau really took that by the reins and said, hey, okay, why does he hate man? Let's give him a reason why he hates man. And he's going to go after Mowgli, because this is literally the son of the man who burned him.
True. Yeah.
I think in every version of Jungle Book, Shere Khan is like not as much of a villain as people want to make him out to be. Because I mean, they say it at the beginning of the 90s one. They're just like, you know, how would you react if someone went into your house and stole all your food?
Yep.
Absolutely. It's, you know, but what I liked about the original one is like in the remake, Shere Khan sort of just kills Akela and then just hangs around and waits for Mowgli to come to him. I just liked how in the original, he was more proactive, where he goes looking for Mowgli and like he's shaking down everybody he can find to see if he can find the location of this man cub. Like, especially when he's talking to Ka, it's hilarious.
Yeah, he's waiting for the news to get to Mowgli.
Yeah, I mean, it's very non-reactive. It's very passive, I felt.
Well, passive-aggressive. Mm-hmm. He's basically, like, he's killed Akela. And now, in Akela, you can inference that he was kind of the leader of this edge of the forest.
Yeah.
And with Shere Khan having changed his hunting grounds, there's a big shift in power. So he wanted to make his presence felt. You know, he's there telling stories to the wolves, not untrue ones. Like that cuckoo bird was a really interesting story. And then Favreau cuts right to that actually happening.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's the only problem I have with it, too, is he's really depending upon news to get to Mowgli. And if King Louis had said nothing, the plan didn't work.
Yeah. Well, you know, it might have come through Ka as well, who seems to be able to read minds and know things. But I think that's how it actually happens in the originals. He's able to gain knowledge by reading Mowgli's mind. But mostly he's just trying to hypnotize him and eat him.
Yeah, which seems to me quite a pleasant way to just, you know, deal with your food. You know, he's like,
well, food that doesn't fight back, you know.
Well, food doesn't fight back. It's kind of okay. You've told it that it's happy and it's nice and it's warm and everything's good. I mean, food is fine.
Yeah, I don't think at least in the original, he's kind of a lazy, fearful hunter. So, you know, somebody like Shere Khan can intimidate him. That big fucking snake in the remake, though, I don't think Shere Khan would have wanted anything to do with it.
No. You know, interestingly enough, that song, Trust in Me, I was reading that song was originally written for Mary Poppins, but presumably under a different context.
Yeah, where would you put that Mary Poppins?
Well, it was called something else.
Probably while a kid is falling asleep, and you know they're gently singing a nice song, and they shelve it and then put it in a minor key, and suddenly it's creepy.
Yeah.
Well, trust in me. I mean, I don't know. I still wouldn't like that in a nice key.
It does have a sinister undertone, and maybe that's why it got cut, as they recognize that it sounds a bit sinister.
Yeah. Yeah, Mary Poppins was like going into child catcher territory at that point.
Yep.
But I do have to say, if you have an opportunity to go online, find the Mary Poppins as a Horror Movie trailer. It's really good.
Yep, it is. Yeah, you know, I like that Scarlett Johansson was Ka. She did a good job. Although I liked the dynamic with Shere Khan interrogating Ka in the original one, where Ka is not necessarily a fan of Mowgli, but is more withholding information from Ka because they don't want to help out Shere Khan in any way, more shape or form. Mm-hmm. And they just want him to leave and leave them alone.
Leave him to play with his snack.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have a line. He's like, what are you doing up there? I'm just entertaining a snack. Because that would be good.
As a whole, I think Favreau did a pretty good job here with reorganizing things. You know, Blue's the one who rescues Mowgli from Ka. They do a better job of explaining why Bagheera is not there rather than just walking off in a huff. Like in the animation, he had a fight with Shere Khan, who was not even present at that point in the movie, in the original film. So he needs to recover before he can catch up, and that gives him a chance to introduce Baloo in a more interesting way. Now, I might have a problem with both of these movies, because Baloo's and Mowgli have really attached itself to each other fairly quickly. I mean, Mowgli's a bit combative in the original film of this bear, and he's just frustrated and beaten on him. But Baloo misses him at the end and wants to adopt him. It's been a day and a half.
Yeah.
Wow, they had a productive day getting all that honey.
They did.
Right?
See, I kind of like that.
Mowgli to just MacGyver everything also within that short time period. That's ridiculous. Yeah. That's crazy.
It is.
Productive.
But it took me a little while, and I'm like, I kind of got that more in the fact that, like, Baloo just kind of, he's entertained by Mowgli in the original, but in this one, it's like, yeah, no, I could use this kid. I could really, really use this kid.
Yeah.
So I get that.
He sees this as a grift, and I like that. That was Favreau pulling something that was already there in the original and just beefing it up.
Oh, and I love the part where he's like, no, you have to get me a lot of honey because winter's coming soon and I'm going to hibernate.
Yeah, that was
and Bagheera
a good line.
Shows up is like, you don't hibernate. He's like, I take a lot of naps.
There's no winter in the jungle. The fact that Mowgli's been raised there, maybe remembered that there is no winter.
Right?
That was actually another small gripe I had with the movie is Mowgli is really dumb for being raised in the jungle. He doesn't know anything. Like, the only things that he knows how to do are all of the MacGyver type stuff, which is also kind of hard to explain, other than presumably natural human tendency is ingenuity in everything that you do in building contraptions.
Yeah, the human idea is like going, no, I'll do stuff because it's easier. Like, I say every invention in humanity is based on laziness, and I love it because it makes sense.
Yeah,
when Baloo saves his life, and he's like, payback for what? He's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
How are you this dumb?
Right?
Well, yeah. He didn't ask him to do it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, he, I don't know, he saw him. What's funny is that Baloo does it, and it's kind of like he can see the potential of having Mowgli there, which is why he saves him from Ka in the first place. But yeah,
at least in the original, it's like Bagheera saving Mowgli from Ka, and then Mowgli immediately returns the favor because Ka's trying to hypnotize Bagheera. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Snap out of it, Bagheera! Oh, I love Ka. Ka was, and it's really interesting, like, you have the voice in the original, which is a very unique voice, not mostly associated with being, like, a soothing, hypnotizing voice. And then you have like Scarlett Johansson, who I was listening to it going like, yeah, no, I could listen to a tape of this and maybe like it would help me go to sleep or I'd have nice dreams. Like, okay, yeah, Scarlett Johansson, while you're in quarantine, can you make a meditation tape for people who have trouble sleeping? That would be amazing. I would pay for it.
that smoky, sultry voice.
Yeah.
Soothing to some, erotic to others.
Yeah. Just relax your toes. Yes, yes, I will, Scarlett. I will.
She could be an ASMR queen.
She really could.
Maybe near her retirement years.
Absolutely. Or she can do it now. We don't know. She can choose what she wants to do.
You're sitting at home not doing much. You can make it. Make it happen.
What do you think of, in general, about the music in the remake? Me and Leah felt that, you know, on the one hand, people want the music because it's Disney's The Jungle Book and their songs are iconic. But obviously, Jon Favreau is not interested in making, a musical fun movie.
I felt the absence. It's very apparent, the absence. Like, the blue thing, he tried to at least fit it in, and King Louie got his moment, but it's... That was it, honestly. Yeah. I bet you he would have pulled that. I bet you Walken probably fought for it. And they gave him a chance to change and explain in song why he's not in orangutan.
Oh, and speaking of what I would have loved is, this is what bothered me kind of the most. I know it's Christopher Walken. Now, Christopher Walken is kind of known for dancing in some, he's known as a dancer. He's been in videos.
Did you love the fact that it was the cowbell that summoned him?
Yeah. More cowbell.
Yeah.
Well, there's a sign here on 17th Ave that said, what 2020 needs is more cowbell.
Nice.
But if they would have made him a regular size dancing orangutan, but Walken-esque dancing orangutan, because he taps and he does that would have been so wonderful, and I feel so robbed that I didn't get that.
Yeah, I felt like even though Walken, and that's something a lot of people really praised, is Walken as King Louie, I felt like somehow a lot of his personality didn't really come through in that character, and there was a lot of ways in which I felt like it was more of a missed opportunity than anything.
I disagree, because there are times where he's talking and I thought, shit, we just slipped into Goodfellas.
Yeah, they leaned really pretty hard into that true romance type Christopher Walken mob boss character.
Oh, see, and I
which
watched,
is a good interpretation, but
I watched At Close Range, the old Sean Penn, Chris Penn movie with Christopher Walken in it, where he's a crime boss. And I don't know how I arrived at that, but I think it was simply because I watched him in The Jungle Book earlier that day.
Yeah. I mean, you hear him immediately and it's like, oh, I'll protect you. I can't do a Walken, so I'm not going to try.
But, I'll protect you, yeah. Mowgli.
And you, as soon as you hear his voice, you're like, oh, this is a protection racket. You know, you've got to bring me something for me to give you something.
Yeah.
Where it really was in the original, it felt more like King Louie would give him the world for this one little secret. And it's you rub my back, I'll rub yours. It wasn't a protection racket. He probably would have treated Mowgli very well. Most of the animals were actually quite helpful to him in the original film.
Yeah.
And the vultures really play a big role, actually. The fact that they're
really
not here
do.
At all.
No. Yeah. I forgot about the vultures, actually, when I was watching the anime version.
You know, I thought they were waiting for him to die so they could eat him. But they were actually, they actually went in and put themselves at risk fighting Shere Khan.
One story beat I would have liked to have seen in the 2016 movie is the idea that the whole time Mowgli is trying to be who he is, and all the animals are telling him, stop doing that, it's not allowed. And by telling him he's one of them, the more isolated he feels. So that's an opportunity for King Louie to come in and say, hey, cousin, we're not so different. You know, maybe we're your people and you should be with us, but they're just using him because they think that he has knowledge. And that maybe was a little bit there, but that's a much more story-driven, meaty type plot point to put in there, that with the protection racket thing, there's a lot of moments where stuff just happens to Mowgli. But there's these themes that they're talking about that they don't really explore as much as they should.
Yeah, he needs to be more, at a certain point, he probably should be more isolated because he's forced to leave his family to kind of protect them. And that's the thing, he volunteers in this version. So he knows why he's leaving. So to have him be isolated and be like, oh my God, I'm just a danger to everybody. I would like him to confront that, learn more about man. In the man village and be like, I don't want to be like that. How do I don't want to go there. To have him struggle with that would be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think that was a lost opportunity. I agree. That would have actually been a really good narrative choice for this film.
Yeah.
Despite that, though, it did really well.
It did do really well, and people really liked it.
It's expensive, too. $175 million, yeah. But you really only had to pay one live actor. Why does it cost so much if everybody's animated? Had an opening weekend of $103 million. That's a little over $103 million. That's really good. Grossed... Yeah. In the U.S. alone, $364.5 million. $364 million almost. Worldwide gross of $966.5 million. Just missed the $1 billion mark.
Wow.
So hugely, wow. Hugely profitable. And yeah, there was still room for improvement on this movie, but I think it's still good. The original film has a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, while it has a 7.4 for this remake. So they're awfully close. Now, Rotten Tomatoes, critically speaking, the original has an 88%, and the remake is at 94%.
Oof, that's a crime.
And they're pretty close for the fans as well, 82% and 86% for the remake. So,
man.
Jeff was right. He is in the minority.
the original one, I'd say, is inarguably better than the remake, I would say.
I would say they're both, like, I would actually keep them fairly equal, because for every fault that the remake has, the original has one too. Like, Favreau's ending is better. I hated the fact that he wound up in the village with the girl, and it feels like a cop-out ending. Just end it and be done with it. Because he didn't want to be there. He wanted to be here and to have like a tacked on love interest right at the end. It feels forced to me.
And it feels weird because it's sort of like now he's interested in girls like just all of a sudden. Like there was never, to me, you have to have the conversation where he's like going, I'm not like other wolves. Like what happens when Mowgli grows up?
Hmm.
I mean, he's not, is he going to bang another wolf? Like what? I know it's an adult theme.
That all feels like it's another story in and of itself rather than to be just tacked on to the end of a movie. And they did do a sequel where that takes place afterwards. And it's, I think, in 2003 to the original Jungle Book. And I watched it last night. It's pretty terrible. So don't bother.
You know, I haven't listened to it, but there was also a sequel to the original Jungle Book that was on it was an audio sequel on a record called More Jungle Book.
Oh.
And it also starred Phil Harris and Louis Prima and Sebastian Cabot. And they were all teaming up to go get Mowgli back from the man village because they missed him. And then Mowgli's in trouble or something. So it might be worth checking out. It was made like a year after the movie came out.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah.
I'll have to go hunting for some of that stuff. Because they were doing lots of those animated records. And I've never heard any of those.
Oh, yeah. And then they had so many. And this is what I miss like about being a kid is you had the record and the book that you follow along with. That was fun. Love that. Lots of kids learn to read that way. What I would have loved is at the end of the original Jungle Book, where it's like Baloo and Bagheera are like going off together and singing. I want a sequel of like their Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. I want their sequel with that, like their little other side quest.
It's interesting with the original film how there is this, you know, dialogue of like Mowgli's not an animal and he's a man. And then the very end of the movie is Mowgli succumbing to his animal instinct of seeing a woman for the first time or seeing a girl for the first time. And it's interesting how Mowgli's final moment in the movie is probably the moment where he's succumbing to a baser animal instinct more than at any other time. So it's a little ironic. As he goes off to live in the man village, he's acting more like an animal than at any point in the movie.
That makes sense, too. And it's sort of, but it's really weird. But it brings me to another thought that you really could have explored is as a wolf, he might be more principled than he will ever be as a man. You know what I'm saying? He might become more animalistic and more feral if he's put in the man village. But the other part that also bothered me about that is he's like an orphan. What do you expect to happen when you go to the village? You're not old enough to really look after yourself. Like, what are you doing there? You're just going to be some poor orphan. This will not end well for you. You're better off in the jungle.
I agree. He was better off in the jungle. And apparently John Favreau thought so too.
Absolutely. Yeah, they didn't want the man village to ruin him.
I don't know if either ending is satisfying.
Well, I think that's up for the viewer to decide. Yeah, you might be right there. I'm not sure if either one are satisfying. The elephants kind of rush in to sweep up Mowgli's mess. That's not the best ending to me either, but not defeating Shere Khan might not have been an option either. But as far as I'm concerned, everything he said was going to happen happened. So
Well, what I found was funny. Yeah, and I mean, when you talk about not needing to kill Shere Khan, I'm completely in agreement with that. You didn't have to, because actually, like, one of the major plot points is of the film is like, oh, Shere Khan is back from wherever else he was. Like, why don't they drive him away to where he was before? That seems reasonable.
And hey, I would love to see a story of what he was doing where he was. Where was he? Why did he leave in the first place? And why did he come back?
Absolutely.
It feels like it's maybe a bully that got overthrown and went back to where he had some weight.
You know, and there's this dialogue with Shere Khan, how he doesn't like Mowgli because Mowgli's a man and man is destructive. Man destroys the jungle and all of this stuff. There is also a huge missed opportunity where you could have something where, yes, that is a part of man's nature, but man can also create, man can also be ingenious and all of these other things, and how Shere Khan, he only was aware of the negative aspect of man, and Mowgli is there to show him that man can rise above that. And that's also kind of, they poke it in the movie and then they don't really go all the way.
Yeah. And I think that's an even better story to tell. And it's unfortunate that we didn't get it this go around. But I don't know, maybe down the road they'll try again. But this was a huge success. I'm actually surprised they haven't followed it up with a sequel, to be honest.
Right?
That kid's getting older, so.
Yeah, I would have thought they would have gone the sequel route where he's like a teenager. And and maybe that's the sequel route, is where they're like, his instincts are taking over. And he's like going, I need a female of something. And they have to deal with that.
Stop acting like a monkey.
Yeah, exactly. You're like going,
quit jerking off.
Quit jerking off. Yeah, exactly. He's like going, you know, the wolves, I love them. They don't do it for me. But with like his ingenious, I was kind of curious when they show him first showing how he got water out of that one big area, because there's like a water peace agreement. And he manages to pull it up, but he just serves himself. Like, it would be interesting to show is like he uses some of his stuff to help other people. Like, he pulls up that water and gives some to Gray. I didn't see why they didn't do that, because then it would be like,
just to show those little kindnesses, like, you're using a trick and you're getting shit for it, but if you're using the trick to help others, then maybe there's like, that'll show why he does it in the first place. Yeah, lots of what ifs and missed opportunities, but I still think the Favreau's is pretty good. I would still put these movies on equal level. Like, for every missed opportunity in the original, they had one in a different missed opportunity. They'd fix it in the remake and then miss something else. So nobody got it 100% perfect, and I'm not sure you can. With these kind of chats, you get there's maybe 20 years down the road, they'll try again and do another attempt and tell that story. But yeah, I think today we are done with The Jungle Book. We had a good time talking about this. We always like doing these Disney to live actions, and God knows they have plenty more. So watch the feed in the future, and I'm sure we'll cover another one down the road, because there's quite a few. Cinderella we haven't done, Lion King we haven't done, Lady and the Tramp we haven't done, Dumbo we haven't done. Those are the ones I know off the top of my head. Aladdin. Yeah, Aladdin. Yeah, Aladdin. Lots more to hit the feed down the road, and we see by the listens that you always like to hear us talk about these type of movies. So we will do another one, but next week we will get more into the festive spirit of the season. So we'll try to drop some seasonal Christmas stuff for you, and hopefully Sam will be back with us next week. I know he was looking forward to doing that with us. I want to give a shout out to Conan from Keeping It 100 for giving me a shout out, even though Disco and JoJo thought I was Chris Jericho.
Really?
Yeah.
Take it. Run with it.
I know. And you know what? I'll run that clip right now from Keeping It 100.
Invader J from Calgary, Alberta. And he writes, I've been listening for years, pretty much from the beginning of Keeping It 100, thanks to Jericho's Brief Podcast Network. I got oversaturated with wrestling pods. Keeping It 100 is still on my list after dropping off most others. Love the banter, intelligent discourse, Mass Republic Minute, the disco listen, that kazoo is like going on the Gong Show. It's best when you are dropping knowledge on disco. I rarely agree with anything disco says. Well, he does. It may be reflex at this point, but if his on-pod character is to speak for idiots, then you speak for the rest of us. I'm glad you future endeavored KG. He was brutal. JoJo is tolerable. He's like a stray puppy you throw scraps to and hope he doesn't pee on the carpet. Thanks for the years of entertainment and wrestling and podcasting and introducing me to the world of Lucha.
Who is this guy?
His name is Invader J from Calgary. Now, we know a lot of guys in Calgary.
Oh, this is from Calgary. This is a guy that probably trained at Lance Storm School.
Mm.
Right.
This is a guy that probably trained at Lance Storm School.
Calgary. Right. Could it be?
And like he, this guy's, if he's from Calgary, he's probably an idiot. You know, I condemn that email.
Even though Jericho was from Winnipeg, Invader J, I mean, that could stand for Jericho. That could be Jericho under a pseudonym.
So all my listeners, if you're wrestling fans, I want you to help perpetuate this myth that Invader J is actually Invader Jericho. Don't say that I am Chris Jericho. That's obviously wrong. We all know better. Yeah. Even Conan knows better. But I like the idea that Disco thinks I might be Chris Jericho. Nice. So don't say I am, but subtly hint that I might be. Because we know
Disco. And if you are Chris Jericho listening.
Yeah, we know Disco's not listening.
Yeah. But if Chris Jericho is listening.
Please help.
Hey, please help. Be part of this.
I think that would be
maybe
fun.
Come on a little bit and be a bit Jericho.
Well, we would love to have Chris Jericho talk about movies with us. I know he's a big movie fan. Maybe if I can get a more of a relationship happening with Conan, he can hook us up. But
first, you need to get started on your list.
Oh, well, Disco called me an idiot, so he's number one on the list.
There you go.
Just for being from Calgary. Well, he's from Calgary. He might be trained with Lance Storm. Come on, man. Yeah. I don't know Lance Storm, but if you want to perpetuate that myth too, that's fine.
Nice.
But thanks for Conan for being the voice of sanity on that show and shouting me out with my little Twitter message that he read out on the air. That was cool. It was kind of cool. Like I had it playing in the background when I was in the shower, and I'm like, hey! and I got great amusement of Disco once again getting it wrong.
So you were naked when you first heard it. Interesting.
Well, very vulnerable. Very vulnerable. Let's not make it weird. Let's not make it weird.
I know. No, you were in the shower. Everybody has to get naked to get the shower. Wrestling.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, you've been training at Lance Storm's Storm Academy, apparently, and I was really sore. I had to loosen up those muscles. And
you do. You really do.
Because I'm also break out the bubbly because I'm also Chris Jericho.
You can't have those. You can't have that sweat clogging your pores.
No.
You got to keep that skin nice and smooth and good, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to smell good. You got to look good if you're Chris Jericho.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And have that useless scarf that does absolutely nothing and a jacket that lights up. And yeah, I will never apologize to Disco. I will never apologize to Disco, just like Jericho.
Nice.
So that's it, Disco. You made the list. All right. And if you don't want to be on the list, then share out the show. Tell everybody about the show. Tell them where to find it. We're in a ton of different places. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. We're everywhere. You can find us on our website as well. Yeah. invasiontheremake.wixsite.com/podcast. Sam usually does this, so I think that's right.
I think so. If you do Wix and Invasion of the Remake in Google, it will come up.
Yeah, and there is...
Like, you are actively hiding from us if you don't want to do that.
And there's a button that takes you directly to our TeePublic store at the top of every page. And you can see all the wonderful new designs that we just posted. The Jeff Omega collection is now up. Mm-hmm. So check them out. They're really cool. I had to order some right away, and we've had a few sales already. So it's great to see that you're liking these new designs, and we're going to keep more stuff coming. So check back to the store regularly. We're hoping we'll get some up. Maybe there'll even be some up by the time you hear this. We're hoping to get a few more up before Christmas as well. So check it out.
And I want to plug the Angry Fish collection, because I'm really happy with those, and I bought one Fish of Fury and Fish Full of Dollars.
Yes, yes.
Very good.
You guys
good
didn't know Trisha's hilarious, you guys.
And this is a
I'm okay.
This is a real fish. She just like sent me this picture of this fish on a shark dive she went, and this really sinister looking fish that is the only thing that bit her.
Yes, consistently biting me for like an hour because my hand was apparently on his rock, but I didn't know he was famous at the time, in my defense.
Yeah, you don't touch a fish's rock if they are the fish. Like,
I know. We had no idea.
Had no idea. So
he's living a quiet life in Fiji? Didn't know.
Yeah, but some of his famous posters are now up at TeePublic, and they are super cool, and Sam made those.
Yes.
Those are fantastic. He took an idea and really ran with it, and your little angry fish took a life of its own.
Oh.
Did you survive 31 Days of Horror? We did. Now you can get the shirt. It's over there at TeePublic as well. And hey, if you were that person that was in that thing that one time, that's a shirt.
Yes.
We can get that there too.
So, it's a good shirt.
Lots of cool swag over there. And you can get other things other than shirts. You can get the hoodies. You can get mugs and travel mugs and pillows and notebooks.
Masks and notebooks. Oh, the notebooks are great.
Those really cool masks that Jay put together.
Yes, yes, yes. The Podcast Forever skull masks are there, and they've taken some of Jeff's designs as well and really tweaked them so they look really cool on a mask as well. So check all the cool stuff out and click on all the tabs and see what you like and fill your house up with Invasion swag. Yeah.
Yes.
And don't forget to follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to send us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, and fan challenges, you can do that at invasionoftheremake@gmail.com. Now remember, if you want to make a fan challenge, A, it should be something that's remakeable, you know, we want to be remakeable, accessible, tell us where to find it.
Yeah.
And before the year 2000. I'm not going to tackle anything in the after 2000. It's too new. If you're complaining about that movie that came out a couple of years ago, can we improve it? Fuck yeah, of course. We're Invasion of the Remake. Will we? No, we're not going to bother, because that's like kicking a horse while it's down. You know, you don't got to give it time to breathe. So go back into the library, find something unusual. The more unusual, the more we enjoy it. So send us your challenges. We're going to get back to it in the new year. I've got a list all ready to go. Trust me, we have been hearing you. It's just... Trust in me. Because we've got your... I'm making the list. I've checked it twice, thrice, and multiple times. We will get back to you. Cade, we haven't forgotten about you in the Cade trilogy, so we will finish that hopefully in the new year. Mm-hmm. And I've got others as well. That's all great requests. I try to reply to each one personally, and if it doesn't make the cut, I will also let you know. But we appreciate all of the input, regardless of whether we take your advice and make it a fan challenge episode or not. If we turn you down on the first one, keep trying. We might make it one of your options a future episode, because I certainly like to see some of that stuff. And there's some amazing stuff we've pulled out of the fan challenges. We've had so much fun doing fan challenges. So
and
keep them coming.
There's some that I had never heard of, and I'm so pleased that I finally got a chance to watch.
Yeah. I mean, Unknown Island. Yeah. I know Jeff didn't like it, but we sure had a lot of fun remaking it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If any movie we've talked about gets made as a movie... Unknown Island would be a movie I'd see, you know, day one, first showing.
Yeah, what we did there was very good. So keep them coming. I mean, God, what else have we done? We did Hard Rock Zombies. We did Meet the Feebles as a fan challenge.
What was the time-traveling woman?
Oh,
Portrait of
Jenny was, man, what a great suggestion that one was. The Portrait of Jenny was an extraordinary film that was not on my radar at all. Wonderful film to just watch, period. Like, go watch that movie. It's really good. I'm not sure if we did it much justice in our update, but I think we did all right.
Two Worlds of Jenny Logan. That movie was really cool.
Yeah. I don't know why Jenny keep coming
and our
up.
First foray onto Pornhub to watch it.
Yeah, that was...
I was like, yeah, I'm here, and it's not for porn. What happened?
Yeah.
Is this my life now?
We had to turn to Pornhub to not watch porn. This is what our fans do to
us. I don't
us.
Know how I feel about that.
But that we
it feels dirty to go on Pornhub and not watch porn.
It is very weird. But that's our fans take us into some strange ass places, and we love you for it. All right, well, that was the Jungle Book. We had a lot of fun doing the Jungle Book. Time to get into Festivus. We'll catch you next week. I've been Jason.
Yes. I continue to be Trish.
And I'm Jeff Omega. Ooh.
This throws us off.
No, really, Sam. No, off. Sam threw you off. I'm surprised you didn't break into your Walken impression today, Trish. You're actually quite good.
I'm okay. Yeah, no. What I want is I think I need the red flower to really get that whole thing. I know my size is confusing. It doesn't make any, like, how do I get out of here?
And we are out of here.
Everyone comes to Peace Rock, so many smells to catch up on. But, I can't help but notice there's this strange odor today. What is it? This scent that I'm on. I almost think it was some kind of man cub.
Mowgli belongs to my pack, Shere Khan.
Mowgli? They've given it a name. When was it we came to adopt man into the jungle?
He's just a cub.
Does my face not remind you of what a grown man can do? Shift your hunting ground for a few years and everyone forgets how the law works. Well, let me remind you. A man cub becomes man, and man is forbidden!
What do you know about law?
Raksha.
Hunting for pleasure, killing for power. You've never known law. The cub is mine. Mine to me, so go back to where you came from, you burned beast!
The tiger knows who rules this part of the jungle. I'm sure he doesn't mean to come here and make threats. Especially during a water truce.
No, I'm deeply respectful of these laws that keep us safe. So here's my promise. Nothing lasts forever. The rains will return, and the river will rise, and when this rock disappears, that truce will end. You want to protect him, fine. But ask yourselves, how many lives is a man cub worth?